Polly, Polly, Polly. This week is part two of my chat with Franklin Vo, where we're going to be continuing a conversation about poly and looking at some concrete tips of how to navigate poly relationships.
I'm Dr. Catalina Lawson, a licensed clinical psychologist, and I love talking about sex. Sex Marks the Spot is a podcast that bridges the gap between what we know and what we actually do when it comes to sex, relationships, and health.
All right, now let's get back to my chat with Franklin Vo, where we're exploring polyamory and navigating these relationships.
You know, particularly when you are exploring poly, I can imagine that with all the excitement of new relationship energy or NRE and all that things, though, that absolutely different people can trigger different traumas or different anxieties or insecurities mm-hmm. as well. And so even for somebody like you who's been experienced and like really explored it, I'm sure that as new people keep coming in, or even when you're getting feedback from others about your work, that probably nudge you much? Or do you find yourself surprised by some of those nudges still?
Not as much as I used to. So I used to get a tremendous amount of email from the website, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the feedback that I would get from the website really didn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, so there's a story about one of the pages on the website. It's the Secondary's Bill of Rights.
Yep.
And this came out of a time when it was still very common in the poly scene to do a primary-secondary model, that polyamory was something that couples did, and it was very rare and considered really unusual and exotic to have egalitarian relationships. Yeah. And so when the Secondary's Bill of Rights went online, got tons and tons and tons of feedback from that site. And a lot of people actually told me things like, what are you talking about? Secondaries don't have rights. If secondaries want rights, they should go find a primary of their own. Secondaries, and this was something that I heard not once, not twice, but multiple times, secondaries should be grateful that the primary couple lets them be there. Yeah, and you're cringing, and wow. I did the same thing. And of course, you say that today, and people are like, oh my God, because polyamory has come to a point where we have institutional knowledge now that says that disenfranchising people in a relationship probably isn't the best possible approach to take, right?
Yeah.
And so now I occasionally get emails from the site that say, well, why are you calling these secondary Bill of Rights? You know, these should be, everybody should have these rights. You know, there's no need for secondaries to have these. And so that, I think, is really a testament to how far we've come.
Absolutely. Well, and it really is interesting because, I mean, definitely again, amongst people who, most of the individuals who I've encountered who are poly has been through my tantra, my tantra work. And so it's like you're in these communities where they're super progressive, they're super open, but yet they're very traditional within poly.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
They very much are primary and secondary. And that's also where, and again, I feel like this is with so many different types of relationships is, it's going back to your rules. It helps us organize almost a bit more. Like it helps us feel secure. And you talked about that a lot in your book about how rules initially can help, particularly a new partner coming into a poly relationship, feel a bit more secure. But these rules actually need to be flexible. Mm-hmm. And when they no longer are working for the relationship, actually need to be changed.
And we need to recognize, too, that fundamentally at their core, rules are a mechanism for blame. Rules are a mechanism for saying, if you do this thing, then you are the bad person. You are the wrong person. And that can be very dangerous. They can feel seductive because they do create that emotional feeling of safety. But I would argue that in most cases, that feeling is probably not real.
Absolutely. Well, and I think one of the things, this is where the need comes in, is it's identifying rather than reacting to the fear or the feeling of threat and that emotionality, actually identifying, well, what's the underlying need there?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
You know? And satiating that need or addressing or at least acknowledging, if you can't even satiate it, but acknowledging that so that there can actually be a response rather than a reaction.
Exactly.
You know, because I feel like rules are trying to mitigate mitigate any type of negative outcome, whatever it be, you know, which you can't do, particularly in relationships. Mm-hmm. You know, we wish we could plan for everything.
Yeah. And this is something that I've seen quite a bit, like in the swing community. There are a lot of swing groups that have a lot of rules about how their members interact with each other. And when I was living in Tampa, there was even a swing community that said that it was against the rules to see any other members of the swing community outside the community. And if you did, they would throw you out. And the purpose of these rules is to try to protect the couple. Because it is almost a cliche in some parts of the swing community that, you know, you have these couples who say, well, we will have recreational sex. It's purely for recreation. We're never going to get emotionally attached. And that works. And they truck along for years and years doing this until they wake up and bam, somebody has just become emotionally attached to another lover and they have no way to deal with it. They have never contemplated this idea. And it's against the rules. And so what they do is they set rules to try to stop that from happening. And if only it were that simple, right? Like, yeah. I mean, if our emotions actually obeyed rules, we could just say, well, it's against the rules to feel jealous. And we'd be done with it. Hey, yep. You know, that's all there is to it. But it doesn't work that way.
No. I mean, again, going back to this idea of control, when I think of exploring poly and actually taking... because it has only recently become more public and there has only been more acknowledgement of it even and me, and there's still stigma for sure, you mm-hmm. know, but so then to actually explore that for yourself and take whatever those risks are, then it's almost like you're doing that because you're wanting to be free. You're wanting to actually embrace whatever it is you're wanting. And mm-hmm. so it's so contradictory to that and actually stifling of your own journey, I can imagine, of applying that. But again, I guess this is, really does come back to it's also how we've learned, how we were raised.
Yes.
You know, as children, we were raised with rules. And some of them worked for us and were meant there to protect us. And a lot of them didn't.
Some of them not so much. Yes.
Exactly.
Although I think it's really dangerous, though, to try to say that people come to poly because, you know, they want the freedom and they want to explore their true selves. That's true for a lot of people. There are a lot of reasons that people come to poly, and I think Absolutely. That it's important to acknowledge that.
No, 100%. No, and I was definitely not trying to minimize it because I think people have engaged in all sorts of relationships for whatever it is for them. I guess one of the things I would love for you to just give us a couple tidbits on. So much of your resource and your book particularly is so practical. And definitely, I encourage everybody to read it, and I've already promoted it so much. I tell so many people I know have read your book and definitely so many people have gone to your site. Like, I guess particularly for individuals who are new to poly. And one of the things that I'm seeing is that particularly in this younger generations, individuals in their 20s, mm-hmm. They're kind of exploring it. A lot and saying, and it's almost as if they're wanting to see themselves as I am poly, you know, like almost like I'm vegan right now. and I don't know maybe this is just my perception and I don't see anything wrong with it. Cause I think everyone explores things, from whatever angle it is. But what are some of your two or three top tips for helping somebody actually just navigate this and feel secure with themselves in trying to explore for themselves?
Security comes from inside of you. It doesn't come from rules. It doesn't come from structures. If you are in a relationship that is monogamous and you want to explore poly, you might lose your relationship. Things might go badly. You might not end up with the person that you started with. This is a thing that can happen. Anybody who tells you otherwise is blowing smoke up your ass. There is real, genuine risk in any change you make in a relationship. And I think that we don't acknowledge that enough.
Yeah.
You know, in a traditional married couple, having a kid, losing a kid, having a family member become sick, getting a new job in a new city, losing a job. These things all are stressors on a relationship. It would be crazy to say that exploring polyamory isn't a stressor on a relationship.
Yep.
accept that. Accept that the significant changes that you make in your life are stressors on relationships. The trick is not to figure out how can we do this safely without any risk, because that's not going to happen. And anybody who says otherwise is lying to you. The trick is, how can we build resiliency into our relationships so that when we are encountering these stressors, we have the tools that we need to deal with them?
Mm, absolutely. You know, you're clearly a writer because your words come out so smoothly. And that actually reminded me of, there was just so many nuggets of amazing quotes, that this idea of resilience and really speaking to that and embracing that mm-hmm. for yourself and actually using wherever you are in any relationship as an opportunity to build further your own resilience and actually riding that wave. You know, I know you talk a lot about, this idea of just these growing pains, but really it is about managing these expectations of heightening your tolerance for it and embracing mm-hmm. it. You know, I think so much of my philosophy is, gosh, if you want a full life, get ready to ride the wave and enjoy mm-hmm, the wave.
Absolutely.
Because it is the wave that actually makes the life full, you know.
And so. I think that there's a lot to be said for the idea that, I believe that I can go into an unfamiliar situation. I believe that I can handle change and I will come out the other side and I will be okay.
100%.
And that is something that is really important, especially if you are approaching polyamory for the first time and your background is with monogamous relationships. Things are going to change. The ideas that serve you well in a traditional monogamous relationship aren't necessarily going to serve you in polyamory. It's hard to start thinking of not just yourself and your one partner, but the needs of all of the people involved, including your partner's other partners.
Oh, 100%. Well, and this is one practical thing I would love for you to speak to is really, I mean, from your own experience, from everything that all of your work is just a little bit of practical advice of how to manage not just time and attention, but your emotional reserve.
Developing the tools of emotional resiliency is something that you could probably do an entire book on.
Yeah.
I think that emotional resiliency is fundamentally going to be rooted in self-efficacy. And people talk about self-esteem and self-efficacy, and a lot of times people will say that they're the same thing. They're really not. Mm-hmm. So self-esteem is the idea that I have worth and value, that I am a meaningful person, that people see value in me. Self-efficacy is a very different animal. Self-efficacy is the idea that I can be in an unfamiliar situation, I can face a problem that I've never faced before, and I can figure it out. Yeah. I may not know how to, I may not know how I'm going to figure it out, but I can. You develop self-efficacy by challenging yourself. You develop self-efficacy by going outside of your comfort zone, by doing things that you don't know how to do, by learning skills that you've never learned before. And every time you succeed at something, it's almost like, you know, you can watch the progress bar in a video game. Every time you succeed in something that you've never done before, your self-efficacy goes up. And
100%.
This is a key part, I believe, of emotional resiliency.
Absolutely. Well, and I think, again, so you're clearly, I'm a cognitive behavioral therapist, so
oh, okay.
You're definitely speaking my language.
Interesting. I didn't even know that was part of it.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, self-efficacy is the core part. That's
oh,
it's the
okay.
core assumption that we actually have control, mm-hmm. and that is in gaining that control and expanding on that control that we heighten our self-efficacy. You know, so that our primary appraisal, our secondary appraisal, actually. So when the primary appraisal is, are we in threat? Are we in danger or not? Our mm-hmm. secondary appraisal is, if we are in threat, do we have the resources to cope? If that is no, then stress happens, no matter what the stressor is. And so self-efficacy really works on our secondary appraisal so mm-hmm. that it is, I can, never I can't. You're not never, but as much as I can, you know?
Today I learned.
Yeah,
I know very little about CBT. And actually, I think of CBT as being something completely different, because in the kink world, it's an entirely different thing altogether. So yeah, today I learned something.
Well, you're very super psychosocially minded. So, I mean, and it's obvious from your work and definitely from speaking with you. One of the things when I was talking earlier about great quotes, the one thing I loved, and I know we talked about this a little bit, but one of the nuggets I loved from your book was when you said, and again, I'm not sure who said it, but compassion is not something you are, not something you feel, but something you practice. Mm-hmm. And compassion requires a willingness to hold others accountable for what they do while accepting them for who they are. Can you expand on this from your own experience and how you've witnessed others practice more compassion in their relationships, as well as really also what blocks us from actually first foremost starting it with ourselves?
Well, that's actually where it stops easily, is with ourselves, because a lot of people don't have the skill of being compassionate with themselves. They hear criticism and they respond with things like shame or with lashing out. And I've seen this unfortunately happen many, many times. So yes, it is absolutely important that compassion does have to start with yourself. And there's a really critical key part of compassion, I think, that's recognizing the fundamental frailty of all of us. Mm-hmm. And when you start from a place of blame, it is very, very difficult to be compassionate. And blame is often about retaliation. It's about, I think you harmed me, therefore I'm going to tear you down. I think that you did this thing to me, so I'm going to make this thing your fault. You know, and part of that is the self-compassion. I'm not going to acknowledge the role that I played in whatever the situation is. And part of it is I'm not going to be compassionate of you, because I am going to focus on you, all of the hurt that I feel.
Yeah.
I'm going to make you responsible for that. And that can lead to some pretty ugly places.
Yeah. No, it's like blame ping pong.
Yes.
You know? And unfortunately, particularly in long-term relationships, once you go down that and you dig your heels in, your heels don't want to come out, because mm-hmm. then you experience that dissonance.
True.
You know, like, and you know, going into that, no, I've been fighting this argument this long. Like, if I give up now, what does that say about me?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is definitely something that I think a lot of people struggle with.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we have gone through so much. And again, it's like you have just such a one, just a way with words. And it's just that I can imagine, like, you clearly exude abundance. but I guess I wanted to end with a few things that you would like to speak to the naysayers or the critics of Polly.
I honestly don't try to spend a lot of time talking to naysayers about polyamory, because, you know, we all have our own lives, and some people, polyamory is a fit for some people and it's not a fit for other people. And I don't like the idea that, you know, that polyamory and monogamy need to be in conflict. So I know that there are people out there who have a lot of misperceptions about polyamory that they haven't unpacked. And, you know, if somebody wants to talk to me about those misperceptions and is actively looking for help in unpacking them, then that's one thing. But I'm not going to chase them down and say, oh my God, look at you, you're completely wrong. And by the way, you should live the way I do, because I think that's kind of absurd. And yes, I think it's unfortunate that there are people who are naysayers about polyamory and then who use their own misperceptions and their own baggage to attack people who are poly. Mm-hmm. I think it's a mistake for poly people to attack monogamy. I think it's a mistake for monogamous people to attack polyamory. So let's not do that, okay?
Absolutely. Let's just not attack what anybody's else decision mm-hmm. is to do with themselves, particularly when it comes to love.
You know, for all of the people out there who think of themselves as weird, for all of the people out there who think of themselves as being like strange or undateable because they have all of these unconventional ideas, no, you're not alone. In a world of nearly 8 billion people, you will never be alone.
100%.
I really am optimistic about what's going to happen with polyamory in the future, because I feel like the people who came to polyamory when I first started exploring it, we were making a lot of stuff up as we went along, and we didn't have a lot of knowledge about what would and wouldn't work. And all we knew that we were reacting against this idea that you had to have monogamous relationships and that was the only way you could be. And we really sort of went through a whole period of time where we needed to sort of unpack these ideas that we'd been given and come to a place where we could make polyamorous relationships that worked. And yeah. Today, we have people who are growing up in a world where polyamory is available to them, and it's just one choice among many, and they're not facing the same kind of pressure to be monogamous. Those are the people that I'm really looking to see how to do polyamory right. Yeah. Because I think that this is the generation that is really going to shine. This is the generation that's really going to show us how it's done.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And it's exciting. I feel like now, particularly with one of the advantages of the internet and all the social media is that it actually can foster community. Mm-hmm. Where oh, yes. You know, which of course you're going to have your bullies or your negatives out there giving their voice, but you're also going to have a lot of other voices, you know, uh-huh. And actually really steering it, because research is just kind of getting, I mean, it's just hasn't even scratched the surface, you know, when it comes to non-monogamous relationships. And so I feel like it really is this grassroots revelation, you know, of actually mm-hmm. supporting one another in expanding love. So
one of my favorite science fiction writers, William Gibson, has this quote that I absolutely love. The street finds its own uses for things. And it's trendy in some places right now to sort of like dish on social media and say, oh yeah, social media is this, you know, it's an addiction and it's destroying people's lives and people are, you know, spending all their time in front of their phones and they're on Facebook all the time instead of communicating with real people. Like, who do you think they're talking to on Facebook? Those are other people they're talking to. Mm-hmm. And especially for non-traditional relationships, social media tools are amazing. Yeah. Like, so all of my partners have a private Facebook group that I'm not part of. And they've had this nice. Private Facebook group for a long time. And like, they invite in even people who I'm not dating, but I've expressed interest in. And it's a way for all of my partners to talk to each other. And it, you know, it's a great tool for avoiding triangulation and avoiding he said, she said, or, you know, hey, Franklin, cool. Go tell this other person that. You know, and I'm not part of it. So they can talk about whatever it is they want to talk about. And this is a fantastic tool for the people who are close to me to have this kind of direct communication that doesn't need to go through me.
100%. Yeah, you need to make an app.
Yeah. You know, that's actually not such a bad idea. But, you know, this is an example of how the street finds its own uses for things. I'm sure that Absolutely. The people who created Facebook would never have conceived of it being used this way. But 100%. It's awesome.
No, I mean, I think that's amazing. And I think it really is also really applying, using, you guys created your own tool to work for your relationship, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that that's your own creativity to it, you know? And I think, and I really have, you've been such a pioneer and such a mentor, you know, while still figuring it all out for yourself too, you know, and that's where I feel like so much of what I appreciate of this, just a lot of this space when we talk about relationships or any type mm-hmm. of self-improvement, it very much is just our own path,
yes. you know,
and it's just, we're all figuring it out on our own and taking what works and what doesn't, you know,
the goal here is not for everybody to do things my way. The goal is for everybody to learn sort of a sense of what works and what doesn't so that we can all do better.
100%. No, and I feel like that definitely, I felt like that reminder is throughout your work, just so you know. Like, I feel like that is constantly there where cool. I feel like it's okay, this is my perspective of it, and this has been my experience, and then this is also, and then take what works, takes what doesn't. I feel like particularly in your book, you guys had almost those, not disclaimers, but those reminders throughout. And to me, again, what that does is it reduces the pressure on people of thinking, oh, it needs to be formulaic. You know,
yes,
like, I have to do this because, again, thinking about, I love your escalator a metaphor for relationships, you know, like the getting closer and moving in and kids, marriage, all these things, you know, probably no relationship has to take that. It's all, it can take whatever pathway it needs to.
And this is the life that you're given, and it's one per customer. And if you break it, you own both pieces. There are no warranties.
So you've already bought it.
Do the best you can to make it what works for you.
100%. Oh, this has been so much fun for me. And
sick.
I'm super excited. I really, really am so honored. I'm totally digging your ears. Your rabbit ears.
And it seems like I love you. They go with me everywhere.
I've been to
so many countries with me.
I love them. Do you want, like, I've definitely seen a lot of pictures of them. So thanks for bringing them out today. Thank you, Franklin, so much for sharing everything.
Wonderful. Thank you.
I really appreciate it. I really, really appreciate it.
The content on this show is meant to be relatable, educational, empowering, and hopefully a little funny. It's not meant to be treatment, and some of the things we talk about may seem more easier said than done. So if you're feeling stuck or alone or distressed, reach out for support from therapists, physicians, or other licensed healthcare providers. Thanks for listening, and tune in each hump day for some juice to fuel your sexy day. Cheers!